Hello, boys and girls. This is Bobby Bliss from Overkill. That's right. You're listening to Pomascalo on the podcast of PowerMetal.de.
Yeah, it's a long time ago since our last interview. It was 2018, the Wings of War CD. But now it's time for a new one. Is everything okay in New Jersey?
Yeah, I think they're back to normal. I mean, we've done, the pandemic fucked up here, just like it fucked up everywhere else around the world. We were on the road when it happened, March 2020. Our last show was Charlotte, North Carolina. That was March 12th of 2020. We were on the road with Exhorter, and we came home and canceled some shows. But it was about 610 days later, because we put it on a T-shirt, postponed for 609 days, and that came to November 14th, 2021, that we played Made Up the New Jersey show. So we've actually been playing since 2021, November. So things are back on track, and did a full tour about a year ago through the Northeast and the Midwest in the U.S. So now we're looking to release, get back into the flow of European tours, something more than just festivals, but, full Overkill.
Last time we met was on the Hamburg Metal Days 2019. That was just even before the pandemic, too. Many other bands used that pandemic time to write cool songs. Overkill also, it seems.
I think so. I think that's a good way to put it. We never believed that the pandemic was going to be as long and as debilitating as it became for the world and for people. We were slated to release Scorched in April of 2021 through Nuclear Blast. But Dee Dee and I spoke about it and said, where we are on the food chain, on the metal food chain, for us not to be able to tour would be a shame. If we wrote a record, our 20th record, and then can't tour it, what's the sense to release it? So that's why we kept waiting and waiting and waiting. And I think the good thing about that wait, it's the longest period of time ever between Overkill records. It's 4 years, 4 years plus. It gave me the opportunity to write the record, to rewrite the record, to rewrite my parts. And I think that really helped. And those guys added more things. Dave's guitar work changed markedly over those 4 years. There were so many little things we added, choirs, cellos, church bells, and. So I think that it made the record bigger for us. I don't think we sat down to say, okay, it's a pandemic, let's write the best record or let's write the best songs we ever had. We said, let's just make an Overkill record. But before we knew it, we had approximately 3 years to work on that record.
It's the 20th album. It's a reason to celebrate. Yeah.
Svansik. We don't celebrate. We just go out on the road and...
Another album, but same questions every time. What is Scorched? What does the album title mean?
One of the things about Overkill that I don't know if people understand it, there's not this great think tank that we really have to get this message across. The message is in the scene itself. The message is in the energy that the record contains. And it's about capturing that energy on tape or in recordings. So how do you capture that energy? Well, you put as much time into it as you can, and you try. If you can feel it in your heart, you can feel it in your soul, it's probably going to come out in the recording. So Scorched, what ended up happening was when Dee Dee made the demo, it was a skeletal demo, so it wasn't totally complete, but it was very close. And the first song that he had on there was titled Opener, and meaning in his head, and I've seen this for years working with him, in his head, it was going to be the opening song on the record. And it was a hard song for me to finish because he had added some background vocals at the beginning. So it took me for fucking a year and a half to get those vocals out of my head. And one day I was just in the kitchen and I was making, steak or lace or something. And I was singing and out of my mouth came the chorus for Scorched, and I was using that word. And that's the simplicity of how this came about. When the song was completed, the guys liked it. And when we were looking for titles for the record, the artwork had not been completed yet. It had been started, but not completed. And we talked it over a little bit. And, you know, I said, you know, it's a little bit like Field of Fire, you know. And then somebody said, who fucking cares? It's 20 records ago. You know, I mean, if it's a good title, it's a good title. So that's as simple as it was. We thought it was a good title. We thought it captured the spirit of what we were doing on the record. You know, it's a hot record, for instance. And it also shows elements of our past. But beyond that, there was no depth or message except that, hey, this is kind of cool.
Some words about DD. From the debut album until now, DD and you are part of the band. What is the secret of the success of those, I would say, brotherhood?
Well, he doesn't speak English, so that helps. I think we understand each other. I mean, that obviously has to be there. I think that we also have the respect enough to not to put our problems in front of people if we have problems. Of course, we disagree, but we do it once we close the door. So it's just the both of us disagreeing about something. But then we always have understood compromise, and we've always spoken to the public, to the press, to the scene. We speak in one voice. We don't speak in two different voices where we contradict each other. I think that that's necessary. It builds trust for sure. You know, when I met Didi all the way in 1980, I think I met his wife of today a day or 2 days later when we were a cover band. So I've been friends with his wife as long as I've been friends with him. And she went on to do some really great things, therapy, et cetera, psychology. And she said the reason it works is because you were brought up by the same kind of a family. Your families had a lot of brothers and sisters. You had a lot of aunts and uncles. You had the same values that you put it into it, that you've always treated each other's families more important than the band. That if he had a problem, I would say, of course I understand. Not like, oh, this is bullshit. You have to understand that. He would understand when I got sick. You know, he would say, what do you need? I'll be there. And I think that that is the key bottom line factor that keeps us united together, that when we know that what we do best together is make music, but really the best thing we do is protect each other.
I had a look on the album artwork. There are two skulls in front of it, and they screaming to each other. And I thought this was Didi and Bobby in the rehearsal room, maybe.
You said you were going to bring the beer. You said you were going to bring the beer. It definitely looks like conflict, the two demons.
To get serious, let's talk about some songs. First of all, Bag of Bones. It's not a typical Overkill song. I would say it's almost a progressive song.
I don't know if I'd go progressive, but for sure it's got it's got a really thick, heavy groove to it. We've always messed around with groove. As far back as, I think, Horoscope, with songs like Thanks for Nothing, the title track Horoscope, Infectious on that record has a really thick center groove section to it. But the whole song has got the groove to it. And the way it swings back and forth, what I found unique to it was there was no right hand chugging to it. But there was ringing chords where I sang the verses. And I thought that that's what made the song very unique for us. Mm-hmm. When this song was mock titled, and I got the first version of it, it was mock titled as Last One. And I was on the phone with Didi and said, hey, did you titled this Last One because it was the last one you completed? He said, no, it's the last one because it's the one that stands aside from all of the others. We're going to have to make it an Overkill song. It's not an Overkill song right now. I thought that was a really good challenge because when the song was finished, it sounds like Overkill performing something that is different from everything that preceded it. And it's what I like about this record the most is that there's so many different nuances or dynamics or characteristics that we can go that far out with the last song, still make it heavy, still make it Overkill, even though it was never written with that perspective.
Yeah, you have to hear it for several times to understand this track. Another song is Fever, and this song starts with a slow part. And my wife screamed, hey, that's Ozzy. And I said, no, this is Peter Gabriel. And at least it was Bobby. It's a very epic song. And I love those tracks like The Birth of Tension or something. This is growing up, the song from first second until the last second. It was, it tells a story, songs like this. And this is also a very epic moment on this record.
I think that so many of the songs on this record have different personalities. Even if they're a thrash song like Twist of the Wick or something like The Surgeon, or whether it be like a heavy rock and roll blues riff like Wicked Place, this is another one of the elements that we use. We've used kind of mellow, melodic, ballad-type sections in songs. We've done Solitude off of Horoscope, Years of Decay. It was In the Middle. There was Private Bleeding off of The Killing Kind. But when I first heard this, what confused me was the difference between the mellow parts and the heavy parts. And then I finally realized what they did, and I talked to Dee Dee about it. They had down-tuned so low that when they hit the first chord coming into the heavy part, it would shake things in my house. Like the glass would shake if I had it up too loud. But they had tuned down to an A. I mean, to the point where it was just like so fucking low. The low end was coming out, was shaking everything. But the contrast between that and the mellow part where the vocals are, I said, this is fucking genius. This is either going to be genius or it's going to be shit. It's going to be no in between here. So I started trying to marry a vocal line to that mellow part. And I was very moody and whispering and trying to be not me, trying to be someone else. You know, and it was just, oh, it's like up and down shit. And it was one day, and it's funny because you said it. One day I was in the kitchen, right? And I was singing. I was living here by myself with my dog. And I was singing, making some food. And I was singing Over the Mountain by Ozzy. And I was like, Over the Mountain. It was just coming out of my mouth. It was just fucking great, right? I was having a time of my life. And I went, that's what it is. Ozzy just sounds like Ozzy when he opens his fucking mouth. I just got to go in there and open my mouth. I don't have to think about this. So that mellow part came out by simplifying it instead of complicating it. And really, the song was an Ozzy song that led me to it. I said, maybe I have an inner Ozzy or something, but if I have an inner Bobby Blitz, Bobby Blitz should just sing this and not overthink it. And I think that the results are really cool on it. Epic, like you say, with the contrast.
Another great anthem is Won't Be Coming Back. Kind regards to Dee Dee also, because the bass sound is not from this planet, or no, let me say, not from this galaxy. This man is a unit between man and bass. I love this bass sound of the Overkill records, and this is what I missed most last year, is the bass from Overkill.
Well, I tend to agree that for sure the bass is back. On this record, he's back. And I attribute that to him and also to Colin Richardson. And one of the things that I think gives us the opportunity to bring that back is the songwriting. Because, again, there's some blues. There's some, like, Won't Be Coming Back is really kind of a traditional heavy metal song once you start getting into the centers of it. So there's room for shit to breathe in there. You know, I mean, you can hear that there's spaces of air where instruments can be heard and all can be louder than everything else. You know, it's the Motorhead principle, everything louder than everything else. But you still want to be able to hear it individually in there. And I think that we accomplished that. And Won't Be Coming Back, I mean, that was such a fun song to do because, you know, I remember telling him when the record was developing, he said, you know, what do you think? And I said, just write it like it's the last record. I said, if you write this like it's the last record we're ever going to do, it's going to be successful. Because there's no way me and you are the kind of guys that we think that way and are going to do something that's okay. It's going to be fucking great if we write it that way. And I think that that has something to do with it, that he said, you know, we're a metal band, we're a thrash band, we're a rock and roll band, we got blues in us, we got fucking old style 70s riffs, we are traditional metal, we are modern metal. So it all those elements came out in the record.
I agree to that. Keyword, last record. I had an interview with Sabina from Holy Moses a few weeks ago. And this band will release their last album also April 14th with the same date as Overkill and Metallica. This is a day to make history in thrash metal, I think.
For sure, for the headbangers. For the underground, for sure.
there will be a song from Holy Moses performed by you on the bonus CD. Are you good friends, Sabina and you?
I've known her since back in the 80s. I told her, I mean, I must have told her 15 years ago. If she ever asked me anything, I always say, sure, yes, of course I will. You always say yes to me. It's because I love you. I can't say no to you. She called me and asked me to perform on a song that's called Cult of the Machine. Probably one of the hardest songs I ever had to perform because I don't have the same mentality for vocal performance and presentation as she does. So I had to really learn that song to be able to get through it and to match her, you know, to match her vocals so that it could be a duet throughout the mix.
The Wings of War was very successful. It was number 5 in Germany. You know, you got many fans here in that area in middle of Europe. Do you remember your first tour with Halloween? I know you're also France for a long time.
Yeah, sure. 1987. Keeper of the Seven Keys and Taking Over. That was the second time we were in Europe. The first time was on the Metal Hammer Road Show a year before that with Anthrax and Agent Steel. But the Halloween tour was a great experience for us because it wasn't a thrash show. There was contrast between the two bands. Halloween was on the fast elevator up to the top at that time, and we were still fighting to get to a position. And I think it made us play harder. But I think the tour, when I still run into people this day that saw those shows, you know, in Nuremberg or in, I think we played like a Stadthalle in Nuremberg. They were playing bigger venues than we could have ever played on our own. They were a much bigger band at this time. Solidified some decent friendships and had some great fun on that record. I remember that they used to make us sit in the back of the bus. We used to take the back of the bus, right? So we'd be on the same, you know, like a tour bus, but it wasn't with beds or anything. It was all seats. We put up a big white sheet like this with an American flag, and we cut a hole in the center of it, and it said, "You are now entering the American sector."
But back in the future, the Overkill tour starts soon, in April, I think, supported by Exhorter and Heathen. That means New Jersey meets New Orleans meets San Francisco. Does that work?
Not in a card game, it doesn't. On stage, it does. On stage, it'll work. When the pandemic shut us all down in 2020, we were on the road. Exhorter was part of the package on the road with us through the States. And we were playing, you know, relatively big venues. We were at a place called the Fillmore when it shut down. But we were doing what's called the House of Blues tour. I don't know if you're familiar with these venues, but they're similar to each other, all in major cities. You know, the motif is the same. The capacities are the same. They're all 1,500 to 2,000 seat, you know, places. So to have Exhorter and Overkill putting those kind of asses in the seats, you know, was a really good thing. Heathen, on the other hand, when Lee from Exodus released the last Heathen record, or the comeback Heathen record, was when we released Ironbound. And I remember back then, even in the sound checks, those records were like 1 and 2 in most German sound checks. I think Rock Hard had Heathen as number 1, Overkill's number 2 for the sound checks. So we thought it would be a great tour with them back in 2010 through Europe. So we took them with us on the road back then. And it was a great tour. So we only have positive expectations for what April 2023 will be with this package.
So more than 40 years of Overkill. Are there any plans for the time after the job, studio tour, and so on?
I don't know if there's plans afterwards. I mean, there's other things, obviously, that we all do. It's not just that we're wrapped only in Overkill. We're 100% committed to it and wrapped in it when we're doing it. Dee Dee writes with other bands. I mean, I've been doing some things with other bands. Dave Linsk does other musical projects. Jason also. Dee Dee even plays rockabilly, you know, some rockabilly stuff with a band called the Cadillac Band. You know, for me, I don't think of the end. You know, I mean, I'm a realistic person. I know I have less time in front of me than I have more time behind me. So I know that it's not, you know, I know it's not all the way to the death, because I'm not going to I'm not going all the way to the death on a stage. I'm doing this as long as I can do it at the level that I have been doing it at. And of course, if that dissipates, it becomes a little bit slower all the time. But to this point, it still does honor to Overkill in the present day and Overkill in a legacy, to be able to perform at that high level, to be able to write records and record records like Scorched that sound like a modern record, but it sounds like it's a modern record throwback that has a new face on the 80s or the 90s. You know, great production. I mean, a guitar that sounds like it could have been on the Horoscope record because of Colin Richardson and him mixing this record. So there's no reason for me to think in those terms, because something will always surface and show itself. Even if I have to retire and drink German beer on a Florida beach. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I can imagine that that works. So at the end, it's a duty for all our guests. Please name your absolute favorite song.
It's the funniest thing. I don't think I've ever had a favorite song that's traveled with me through my entire life, because I'm really eclectic with what I like. I just found on YouTube, it was only a few weeks ago, and I've been listening to it every fucking day. And it's a live recording of Manowar in Bremen from February. And it's taken from the back of the hall, so you can see all of the lights. And for some reason, the sound is really good on this. Not great, but good enough to understand on a live performance. And the song was Battle Hymn. And it has brought back so many memories to me of like the early days, like when that record was released. I guess that record was 1984 or 83. You know, we had Battle Hymns in, we had it down in the studio we rehearsed in. And that one song to me was one of the most perfectly written metal songs of all time. And to see the way that they've done it with the lights and everything. And plus they have Michelangelo Battio playing guitar, he's an American shredder out of Chicago. I was blown away by it. So I'm going to have to pick that just because of this time in history. And it's been my most played on my playlist right now for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, my song is also a song I'm realized on Spotify a few weeks ago. I remember that song because my cousin came up with it as we were 13 years old or 14 years old, end of the 70s. The name of the song was Overkill from a band called Motorhead. And this was the fastest and loudest thing I ever heard at that time.
I could see that. I got to sing that with Lemmy in Berlin one night. Good memory.
Okay, yeah, of course. I met Lemmy in Hamburg, but end of the 80s, and Motorhead was the loudest show I've ever heard. 3 weeks without hearing everything. Thank you for the interview. Very good luck for the album, for the tour, and maybe we see us on tour.
I hope so, Frank. See ya.
Bye.
Cheers.